My name is Sigrun and I'm an alcoholic. I want to welcome the newcomer especially. It's really good to be with you and thank you for flying me over here. I want to tell you about the moment where I got the invitation. It's a very important moment in my life where I got the invitation to come here to speak. I was at a meeting, AA meeting in Iceland. And I was sitting at the meeting and I was thinking about I was going to move to Basel. And I was thinking, do I need to connect to AA in Basel? Maybe I'm okay not to be an AA person in Basel. Maybe I can start anew in Basel. Maybe I'm doing okay. I don't need this AA meetings anymore. And I get a phone call from Elizabeth. And that's my higher power. That's my higher power today. This is how he speaks to me. It's, oh, you have a job to do. You have a job to do as an AA person to talk about your experience of this program. So it's really an answer to me at that point in time. I need AA. AA needs me, and that's my life. That's my foundation. But regularly I get this. Do I need it? Still. So my sobriety date is the 26th of December, 1999. I'm different from some people in AA. I've never gone to therapy. I quit on my own will, so to say. But I had been doing the steps in Al-Anon, so I'm a double winner. I had been living with an alcoholic for a long time, raised in an alcoholic family, and I had been battling this illness of alcoholism. I had read the book many times as an Al-Anon. Huh? Read this book, trying to find a solution, how to make my husband, or not husband, but not married, quit. How can I make him quit? I was trying to find the solution. And because of my step working in Al-Anon, I had somewhat of a relationship to a higher power. I cannot even explain to you what it was. It's like a mist. I was drinking, I was using morphine, and I was doing Al-Anon meetings and 12-step work. That's really a... you know? And thanks to AA members in Al-Anon rooms, I found my way to AA later. But this moment of spiritual awakening, my first moment of clarity, I was completely drunk on 26th of December. I had a party. There was a lot of noise going on, a lot of fighting, a lot of alcoholism. And I was pulled into the bedroom of my daughter. I'm holding her in my arms and I'm giving her some water to drink. And in this moment of time, something happened. And to me, it was a life-altering moment. But so simple. It was just this voice within me saying, you can never grow spiritually if you don't stop using. And that was it. And in my case, it was forever. I made this decision at that point. I will never drink again. I will never use morphine again. It was really clear at that moment. The next day I woke up and I'm like, and I don't really, the next 2 years I don't really remember, and it would have been really good for me to go to therapy. It would have been so good for me to know about alcoholism. I did not. I didn't know what was wrong with me. For 2 years, I just wanted to die. Really wanted to die. And to me, this is really clear. You know, I'm an alcoholic and I drink to rest. That's really clear to me. 2 years I wasn't drinking, but I felt worse than ever. Completely stripped of every longing to breathe. And I look at it as a bit of a, it's like a field. Everyone knows what a field is. It's a big, big field. And when I'm a child, it's a field of possibilities. Anything is possible. No dream is too big. Anything is possible. And this field of mine, it was like the soil, the ground, the earth, was dusty. I took it up and it just... There was no growth in that field anymore. I had taken myself into a box, boom, 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 and I was stuck into this field and there was nothing, there was no air. And every day I would walk my life and it was like... Every night I would go into the shower and I'd just, please don't let me wake up. But I couldn't take my life. Couldn't do it. And I think yesterday in the panel I shared an experience that is really important to me. That is the first experience I feel myself not alone in this world. 5, 6 years old, laying in the snow. I'm just laying there, a child. It's naive thinking, but I remember this feeling of looking at the stars and I connect. I am one with everything. And this feeling of everything that's beyond good and evil. This love of nature. This love of the big, big nature and being a part of it. And this is a feeling I have to carry. And when I was about 15 years old, I mean, I was a prospect student. I was the head of every society they had in school. I was the person that was socially active. I was good at everything, really. I was a 10A student. I was a soccer champion. I was a dancer. I was a guitar player. I did everything. But every single thing I did, I felt alone. I always felt not in my skin. Lonely, fearful, always. So at 15, it was snowing, at a party, someone brings Jack Daniels to me for the first time. And I look at this bottle, and you know, I'm coming from an alcoholic family. I know what alcoholism is. I look at this bottle, and maybe, yeah. And it's, you know, totally remember this. Snow, like big, big, you know, piles of snow all around. I have this Jack Daniels bottle, and I'm just, I totally went for it. And this feeling of, you know, you know, and I remember the next moment I'm lying in the snow, you know, and this is like a connection to my childhood experience. I'm lying in the snow, but this time I'm falling inside. I'm not connecting, I'm disconnecting. And I'm just vroom, vroom, vroom. But you know, it was a break. It was a break from this mind. Total break. And what happened? That's what I did. I have diaries from that time. I don't remember, but I have diaries. It's a lot to have diaries to read about how you were feeling when you were struggling alcoholism at 16 years old. I was already struggling. I was already writing in my diary, I'm not going to do this tomorrow, I'm not going to do this next weekend. And then next page, oh, maybe it's okay to do it if I do it differently. I had a list, tequila, don't do that because then you go sexually crazy. Light wine, I get headaches. Beer, I throw up. You know, I had a list. So what to avoid? So it was Jack Daniels I could use. That was my drug of choice, yeah? Then around 16 years old, I have an operation on my back and I get to know morphine. Morphine is totally my drug of choice, you know? What morphine does to me is this, I wake up. I don't go this sleeping situation. I wake up and I get this feeling of I can do anything. And this is like, don't want to talk about it anymore. Yeah? Don't like talking about this. And this is like it's like another person, another life, and so painful that, you know, stripped of my dreams, stripped of my field of possibilities. And these 2 years that I was sober without a solution, that's my worst time, yeah? I always have to talk about that again. That's my moment of breaking out. That's my moment of waking up in fear, going to sleep in fear. And how does that present itself in my everyday life? Somebody is driving behind me and they cut me. Ah, you're cutting me. I follow the car. I stop at the next light. I rip up the door open. I said, you cut me. That's me. Not getting the service I want at a restaurant. In the bank, on the phone. That's me. Sober. 2 years sober. I was in my bedroom with my second child. Going like this. My thought, this is totally something I always want to share. My thought was, how can I make her stop crying? My next thought was, throw her in the wall. That was my situation, 2 years sober. 2 years sober, I was thinking about throwing my child in the wall. I wouldn't do it, but I was thinking it. And at that moment, my baby fell asleep. I went into the living room. I picked up this book once again because I thought he was the problem. My alcoholic was the problem. And I opened the book. I just randomly opened the book. And that's my higher power. And I read this. I want to read it. Now and then, a serious drinker, being dry at the moment, says, I don't miss it at all. Feel better, work better, having a better time. As ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such selling. We know our friend is like a boy. This is where I read. I know I am like a girl, whistling in the dark to keep up my spirit. I fool myself. Inwardly, I would give everything to take a half a dozen drinks and get away with them. I will presently try the old game again, for I am not happy about my sobriety. I cannot picture life without alcohol. Someday, I will be unable to imagine life, either with alcohol or without it. Then, I will know loneliness, such as few do. I will be at the jumping off place. I am at the jumping off place. I will wish for the end. And I'm an alcoholic. I have untreated alcoholism. And I was so lucky that I lived in an AA building. Really. First floor, there was a home with sponsorship, active sponsorship going on. In and out, Al-Anons, alcoholics all day long. Second floor, there was an AA person, a 12-step person. Third floor, next to me, there was an AA person. So I was like in the hall of fame, alcoholics fame, you know? So it was really easy for me to just, I walked downstairs with the book and I knocked on the door and this friend of mine opens the door, she looks at me and says, finally! Do you want me to get you a sponsor? Because I was an Al-Anon, I knew everything about this. And my first reaction was, no, I can do it. And she looked at me and she said, I'm calling anyway. And she called my first sponsor. That's how I got my first sponsor. I would have never had the courage to ask somebody to sponsor me. So that's my tactic today also. I offer people to sponsor them. I don't wait all the time. Sometimes I look at somebody and I go, because I couldn't do it. I couldn't take the step. And the next week I was working the steps. And this is the field, you know, the field of destruction. I'm standing on the field of destruction, and all of a sudden I start to realize I'm completely powerless. I'm completely unmanageable. How? How am I that, you know? No, it's like Ruben said before. He had everything to control. His life was okay. I mean, my life was okay on the outside. On the inside, it was a field of destruction. But I had to get to know this first step. I had to do some exercises to get to know my mind. I had to look at how I couldn't control my thinking processes, how I couldn't control my communication with the other, how I couldn't control my everyday routine, sleeping, eating, exercising, taking care of myself. And this thinking, you know, how to control my thinking. Always judging myself, always judging the other, never on the same level. Life was horrible. Fear, controlled by fear, all the time. And I had to really go into this. What's the difference between not managing my life? You know, this vanmáttur, English.
Powerlessness.
Powerlessness, what's the difference between powerlessness and not being in control? I had to really find out. And that was a breakthrough moment for me, realizing that I had some chance to change a lot of things myself, but I didn't have the power to do it. And then there was all the things I couldn't change and would never be able to change. And then it's like, oh, how? What's the next step? And it's so logical. It's in the book. And it's like, bling! I'm 6 years old, I'm lying in the snow, and this feeling of togetherness. That was my higher power. Reconnecting to this feeling. I had a really good sponsor who said, don't complicate higher power. Please don't complicate it. And she even said, fake it till you make it. Just do it. And I started to do the third step prayer. First with her, and then I did it. And sometimes I do it every day. I've done it for every day now for almost 2 years. Sometimes I have periods where I don't do it. But it's always progress. It's exercise. Then we had the fourth step. And in my fourth step, it was, I came from a really, I had two homes. One home was really violent. The other home was really loving and caring. So I had a split personality within myself. Raised in both good and bad. I had lots of issues, sexual abuse. I had lots of things that had happened in my past. Lots of things happened like that I was carrying. And this moment in the snow where I'm drinking and I can't get out, that's a little bit the heaviness of my past. That, you know, I can't, you know, the moment of six-year-old, I stand up and I'm upright and I'm trusting and I'm loving and everything is possible. But this moment of the first drink, that's the moment in my fourth step. It's too much. How can I get rid of this? How can I take the steps of being a humble human being with all this past? I had done so many things that were like... And in my first fifth step, I didn't share everything. There were things that I would never share. There were hurts that I would never share. And I carried it. And it wasn't until I got another sponsor that I had the courage to say everything. And yeah, my biggest ninth step was really I had to take the chance of losing everything. To come clean, I could really lose everything. My manmorth. Ah, oh, it's a difficult word. Manmorth, Elizabeth.
reputation
somehow, but yeah, a little bit more than reputation. Like, yeah. But lose my family, lose my dignity. And I had to pray for it. And my sponsor wasn't so sure what to do about it. She said, wait. Just let's see if God shows you the way. 2 years later, I met this person that I had harmed. Walking with my children, and it was the right moment. And I went up to them and I admitted to my fault. Yeah? Just, I own this. It's not possible to... I'm sorry. It's just not possible. I said, I own it. Is there anything you want me to do to correct this? And he wanted me to do. He wanted me to make phone calls. He wanted me to talk to his father, his mother, his ex-girlfriend at the point. There was a lot of things I had to do. And I take the step. The morning after is this moment of the book where you walk and you have a new... connection to life. You've been lifted to a higher because you don't, I'm not laying in the snow anymore with this heavy burden, and I cannot stand up anymore. This was the moment I could stand up again, relieved from the fear of the past. Another thing, when I was working the steps 6 and 7, it's like, you know, take away my faults, take away my faults. And I was so sincere that the sky opened and there was a sun right into my window, and it was like, oh. And the next morning I woke up and I'm like, I'm free. I don't have any defects of character. I'm a new person. 3 hours later, the man on the floor beneath me, a little bit too noisy for my child sleeping in the bed, music, boom, 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 boom. I walk downstairs, I knock, and he opens the door and I'm like, what the fuck are you thinking? And at that moment, I'm like, what happened? You were going to take it away from me. And I really thought, it took me 6 months to realize what it means to be humble before God. When I'm humble, I'm saying, show me. Show me my defects of character. I need to learn about them. I need to see what I have to change. And then I need to make exercises. I'm the one that has to be in the bank, wanting to snap at the person because they're really rude. Huh? And at that moment, I have to find something positive to say to that person. I have to do it. And it has to be true. It has to be real. Something positive. I'm standing in the line. Somebody cuts the line in the supermarket. And I'm like, and then, do you want to go? I step away. That's the way I do it. I have to practice the way to change my defects of character. And it's one day at a time, and I'm still doing it. I had a moment of breaking the last official snapping. Do you have this? Do you know what I mean when I say snapping? Bah! You know. So I'm in the car 8 years ago. My girls in the back, I had spent a lot of money to give them some nice presents, some soil and plants to, you know, make grow, and it was a beautiful day, and they are fighting over the plants. They are fighting over what I had just given them. They are not, you know, they are not so appreciative. And, you know, this fighting starts to get a little bit noisy, and the car is my field of losing it, you know, snapping. And this moment, it's the last moment I really snapped, 8 years ago. I turn around and I bah at my children. 8.5 years sobriety. I turn around and I bah, totally lose it. So that I had to pull over, get out of the car, and I'm like this, like a child. And I had to go back home, go through the suffering of being the worst mother. I'm really a bad mother. And then, you know, calling the sponsor, telling her about the experience. She's saying, reconnect to God. What has the program taught you to do? So I have to sit down with my children, apologize. I'm sorry. And I had this moment where my daughter comes and she said, oh, Mom, sometimes it's okay that you do this because then I know how it is to be human. You are not perfect. Think about that. But, you know, it really was the last time. Now it's more of a... you know, doing the dishes like this. Closing the cupboards, you know, but it's not this, and it's more like a, you know, now I'm sorry girls, I'm a little bit like off track, I'm starting my period, you know, something like that. But it's exercise, total exercise, and I had to really work on this. I had to work on it, and the only way for me to work on this is to have humor. So important in my work as a recovered alcoholic. This, and then I start to look at it. How can you not laugh, you know? This is like, or the face, this face that sometimes says, and I think about the face and I'm like, oh my God, how childish, you know? But I have to have humor. I have to have humor to be able to live one day at a time. The 9th steps, I really had to, this was the only ninth step that I really took practically. The others I had to change. In my Al-Anon work, I had told so many people I'm sorry. It was just totally, there was no way for people to hear I'm sorry from me again. So I had to really change the way I talk to people. Really change, and that's what I try to do every day. So we're up to the 10th step. My favorite promise in the AA book is the 10th step promise, and that's a place, that's a promise that has come true in my life today. I realized it maybe 9 months ago. I didn't realize it till then. So I'm going to read this. This is the place for the newcomer. You are hopefully you will do these first steps that I've gone into. But when you're at the place where you're just about starting to take your nine steps, you're just about starting to admit to who you really were and have the hope to who you really want to become or reconnecting to who you were as a child, then this promise comes. You're starting to live this program one day at a time. One day at a time. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. And then I'll jump to... And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone. Even alcohol. This is amazing promise. Think about it. Sitting here, I remember being like this 2 year sobriety, fighting everything, my own breath. And here's a promise. Ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. You don't have to fight anymore. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If we are tempted, really important, you will be tempted. But if we are tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. And we will find that this has happened automatically. That's my experience. All of a sudden, I'm here. Totally react sanely around alcohol. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. Think about it. No effort. This has happened. So the effort, that's no effort. That's the steps. This is a promise when we are to step 10. We are living step 10. We are waking up every morning. The book talks about, it's step 11, prayer and meditation. I tell you how my mornings go, because I'm totally not perfect. I'm so not perfect. So, I could do this in Icelandic, but because this is my morning prayer. So, the third step prayer. I explain to you how I go through the third step prayer. It's sometimes it's not like this, but most of the time it's like this struggle. So, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. No fucking way! Why should I do something that you will? Then you could just take away everything I like. You could take away everything I like. That's the first. Really, it's a struggle for me. In doing this prayer, being conscious about how my thought processes are, this is how I think. And then it comes, take away my difficulties. Yeah. Take away my difficulties. Then I get in. I'm willing for the God of my understanding to take away my difficulties. I totally want that. Who doesn't want that? No difficulties, please. That victory over them may bear witness to those, I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. There I reconnect to the other. There I'm no longer I, I'm us. There I'm pointed into the direction of usness. We have a word in Icelandic that means present, viðstödd. And if you translate it to exactly, it's us. Now, like being present in us. Present in us. Viðstödd, here and now. So this prayer, first it's like challenging me. Let go of your will. Anything can happen. I'm in your hands. And it's like, oh no. And then it's like, I take away your difficulties. Okay, I'm ready to listen to that. And then it's like, okay, let's be us present. Let's be in us. Not in you. Ego, 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 ego. And then the last. May I do thy will always. So every morning, I wake up with two forces in my head. The darkness and the lightness. And my challenge before was to be all lightness. Huh? And getting rid of the darkness, fighting the darkness, really fighting the darkness. But now, it's not that way. Now it's the balance, the in-between. That's what I wish for. I want to be in-between. I want to be a person that it's okay that sometimes I'm just, I have a shitty day, you know? But it's also really good to remember this six-year-old lying and totally trusting. Everything is possible. And with the 12th step, I mean, there's a whole chapter on the 12th step. And I could tell you, you know, my first experience of going on my knees was because of service. Because I couldn't pour coffee for people. I just couldn't do it. I was just too afraid to do it. I couldn't do like normal service, so I would clean the toilets after meetings. And I was on my knees, and I totally had a spiritual awakening on my knees, cleaning the toilet. Totally present. Totally thankful for cleaning the toilets of other alcoholics. Think about it. And it was so easy after that cleaning of toilets to go on my knees and just do my prayers. It's humility. I'm just totally willing to do what I have to do to be sober. I did the childcare. I did lots of responsibilities within AA. I was a mega sponsor. 10 sponsees. I'm alone with 3 children, you know. So balancing home and AA. I told about it yesterday. My eldest daughter said, Mom, please, can you be my sponsor? So I had to really learn again about the balance. And there's also a talk about it in the book that an alcoholic is not really doing well if he's not doing this program within his own home. So I had to really go, you know, I had to reconsider my sponsoring. And now I have always one sponsee that is active working the steps. The other ones drift away and become friends. My family is within AA because I did service. That's the gift of service is friendships, family. My children are children's friends with my AA friends. It's a family. My sponsor, I've had 4 sponsors, and I call my sponsor once, twice a week. I meet her every other week. And this is with 15 years of sobriety. I'm still doing this. I wouldn't stop doing it. I go to 3 meetings a week, sometimes up to 10 meetings a week, and usually that's when I'm really want to, you know, contribute, be there for the newcomer. So, higher power. Appendixes 2. The first thing I do with sponsees the first meeting I have with sponsees. That's how I was taught to do it, and I do it. We read this appendices to spiritual experience. And there's a quote. I've actually learned that it's not by Herbert Spencer. It's something totally not right. But it doesn't matter. It's a fantastic quote. So, there is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contact prior to investigation. That means judging something before trying it. So to the newcomer here, try it, you know? I think really we have nothing to lose, really. And another thing I want to share, because there's a lot of probably double winners in here. The father of my children is still out there. Huh? We've been divorced for 6 years. And he's really low. What do you call it? Really taken by alcoholism, really. I have not ever, because of the program, because of this book, because of the chapter to families, to wives, I've learned something. I have never talked badly about my ex to my children. Ever. And what has that given us? That has given my children freedom to love him as he is. Because he's an alcoholic, like me, like us. Huh? He's not been responsible in their life, you know. I've been alone doing this. But there is no hate. There is no grudge. There is a friendship. And this is the most important gift the AA program has given my family. Because it's totally... How can I explain this? I don't have to fight. I can let go. And I can be strong enough, upright enough to carry this responsibility because he's sick. So to the ones that are fighting this kind of situation, the book has answers. You know, it is a language of old times, submissive language somehow, but if we take it into new times, it's all about love. It's about love, respect, letting go, trusting, and being there, you know. And we also have no codependency in this relationship. He will come, and he's maybe high, and he's sitting there. The girls need to see him, and he's high, and they are strange, and they're like, why is he so strange? And I will just say, you know, your father is under the influence of drugs. That's why he's like that. Do you have any questions? Do you want to ask him about this? It's honest relationship. They totally know what alcoholism is about. And there is no hiding. There is no hiding. That means there is no fear. And he can answer them like he can. And it's what a gift. So, now we're on the field of possibilities, yeah? You know? 13 years ago, I was in the field of destruction. I could not breathe. I didn't want to live. I had no wishes. Today, I'm standing on this field of possibilities. You know, anything is possible. I shook my roots down there, and I'm just... And it's like, oh, where do you want to take me next? There's this God, you know? Where do you want to take me next? And sometimes I wake up and it's like, poof, I have to... but I wanted to go there. And God always has a better plan. Always. Always. And I mean, when I started this program, I was a homeworking mom. I had a business, but I didn't really like this business. And it was like... Bleh. And now I'm like, okay. When I was 6 years old, lying in the snow, I had a dream. I wanted to be an artist. I wanted to travel the world. I wanted to learn things. That's happening. So, you know, the program has given me the strength to do anything. Alone with 3 children, I graduated with my PhD from art school. I've traveled the world. I've done my bucket list. I had the bucket list. I want to fly, I want to sail, I want to dive, I want to, you know, I did it all. 2 years I took for this. Still going to 3 to 5 meetings a week. No matter where I'm in the world, I go to 3 to 5 meetings a week. Talk to my sponsor, and that's how it's possible to make my dreams come true. I get a power that's greater than myself, a power that can do for me that what I cannot do myself. And it's really not a program of confinement. That's what I thought for a long time. I will be restricted in this community of the AA program. You know, it's like I have to go to meetings, I have to do this. But it's really freedom. The program really supports freedom. And I can do whatever I want to do. And now it's like nothing can really stop me except for my own ego that could stop me. My fear. Yeah. So, I really think I've said enough. And thank you for inviting me.